This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You are on Saturday Magazine with Macca and Madeline. Our next guest is Carla Pencott from the Centre for Independent Studies. Now, what's your title, Carla? I don't want to get it wrong.
I'm actually called Communications Director, but that's because the real title doesn't fit on a business card, which is Research Editor and Media Liaison for Research.
Oh, there you go. Now, Carla, I've actually known for a very long time, and Carla, through the Centre for Independent Studies, helps us to source interview subjects, and one of which is coming up in the next segment, Professor Richard Hare from Tasmania. And the Centre for Independent Studies, I wanted to speak to Carla so people can actually understand what the Centre for Independent Studies is. Some people might think it sits on one side of the spectrum or another, but tell us the history of the Centre for Independent Studies, Carla, and what it does.
Well, let's go to the spectrum first. We are centre-right, which means we sit a little to the right of, I suppose everybody actually thinks they're in the centre. So we sit a little to the right of that. We're a fairly broad church, so our researchers range from being libertarian. We've had a Marxist, a couple of Labour people recently, and right through to, I think we have a conservative there as well.
Just one?
Where, only one who you've had in the studio from time to time.
Yes.
This is Peter Kirby.
Yes.
We're an independent public policy research organisation, which means we're not funded by government and we don't do commissioned research.
So a lot of people would say, you know, when you say you're centre-right, depending on where you sit on the left spectrum, people might think it's not centre-right. And, you know, for our listeners, when I speak with Carla and we discuss upcoming guests, and I'm probably not saying too much. I did say too much that I shouldn't. I did say to Carla, now, Carla, I don't want any right-wing nut jobs.
I don't think we have any right-wing nut jobs on staff.
Good. So in terms of, you say you don't do commissioned research, so how do you decide, you know, what the centre is actually going to study and what you're going to ask people, you know, to write papers for, or, you know, to start talking about issues? How do you arrive at that point?
Those conversations usually happen in the researchers' meetings, and the researchers will bring their concerns about particular aspects of government policy to the meeting. So, for example, one of the CIS's long-standing campaigns, which has come to fruition, has been for, and you've got to remember we've been there for 45, nearly 50 years, but over the past more than a decade has been around literacy and numeracy for school students.
Yes.
And we spearheaded the push, we're in the vanguard for bringing in the phonics check, to check that kids are actually learning to read properly at a very young age, and so that you can catch up those that are falling behind early enough for them to not fall behind any further. So that was brought about by the then researchers and ones now seeing results like the PISA and the OECD results in literacy and numeracy for Australian students. With economics, we've got three or four economists on staff. Our chief economist, Dr. Peter Tulip, is ex-RBA and has been concerned with the RBA review, of course, but his specialty is housing affordability. So the short answer is that the researchers look at what's happening and look at the data in their area and bring those concerns to the researchers' meetings. We then discuss how to go about the particular research, whether it should be modelling, whether it should be polling, or whether it should be more exploratory research.
Madeline's got a question for you, but just first, so Peter Tulip, he's going to be joining us in a future show to talk about the Reserve Bank, and also Peter Curti also, who's been involved or engaged in some polling around broadly religious discrimination. So our listeners, you know, you can look forward to those people joining us in a future show. Madeline.
Hello, Carla.
Hello, Madeline.
Hello. This, excuse my ignorance then, but if you're not doing commissioned research and it's not government, how is it funded?
It's funded by our members and our donors. Our members pay subscription fees to be members, and we have private donors as well.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you.
So it's been around about 50 years or so, Carla. When you commission some research or the centre opens the debate on something, has there been subjects that, you know, have really gone in a direction that you didn't expect, or there have been outcomes that perhaps you went, oh, I actually didn't expect that? How does that play out for you?
Well, absolutely. And Peter Curti's most recent paper, which we published last week, is an example of that. That paper is based on YouGov polling that we ordered to be done on freedom of speech and, well, attitudes to freedom of speech and freedom of religion in Australia. And one of the surprising results that came out of that, and which you might have seen some of the media around that, was that a majority of people, small majority, but a majority, do not support religious or faith-based organisations and schools having the right to hire on the basis of faith. So I think that the result was something like 34% thought they should have that right and 57% thought they shouldn't. That was not expected by the researchers, but right. That was such a surprising result that they made that the headline of their media release and their op-eds around that. And I think The Australian and others covered that news as well, because it shows a shifting tide, and they want to know what that means in terms of Australia. So that does happen occasionally, particularly with polling results.
Peter Curti and myself, some listeners might recall, we had some, I wouldn't call it spirited debate, but very engaged debate around marriage equality and some other matters. So I'm looking forward to speaking to Peter again. When you do this research, Carla, how does it, you know, in your understanding, you know, having worked in the media for a very long time as well, how does you think this feeds in, you know, the big house on the hill in Canberra? Do you think members of the government and the opposition, you know, obviously they read it, but do they then engage with you? I'm not asking you to name names, but do they then say, oh, can we have some more detail about this, or come and talk to us about this? Does that happen?
Yes, it does. Some do, some don't. Some don't want to see research. Some pay more attention to, I suppose, the front pages of the media. Some don't pay any attention to that. And so sometimes it takes a long time for the research to filter through. And I refer back to the literacy research.
Yes.
That took, and sometimes it does. This is a long tail effort. It can take a few years of talking to nearly every politician on all sides and every key stakeholder, and presenting the evidence over and over and redoing the evidence with new numbers. Sometimes it takes that long to get it through.
Wow. Now, I'm putting you on the spot here, Carla. Is there a subject or an issue that you'd like to see CIS do some research or polling on that they haven't as yet?
look, there are a couple that I would like to see, but this is going to sound very, very boring, Macca. So if I can go into policy wonk mode.
Yep.
The recent changes to, or proposed changes to superannuation, include the proposal that people's superannuation be taxed on something called unrealised gain.
Mm.
You're across that, probably.
I am, but people... need to understand that this taxing of unrealised gains, I'm with you on this, this is a very serious matter, and it if it happens with superannuation, trust me, it will happen elsewhere.
Can
later.
You explain a bit more about what it is for us?
Certainly, Madeline.
Thank you.
So if I can put forward an example, just I'll create out of thin air. If you have in your superannuation, let's leave alone the $3 million level that is being talked about for changing tax purposes, but the unrealized gains is a separate issue. Supposing you have $200,000 in your superannuation, and that is held in, for example, a share portfolio. What they're talking about, say, if your shares are with the Commonwealth Bank, or the Commonwealth Bank, when you bought the shares, or your superannuation program bought the shares, were worth $10 a share. God knows they're probably worth way more than that. I'm just plucking numbers out of thin air. If then a year later, those shares are worth $20 a share, what the ATO is proposed that they'll do is that you will be taxed, even though you haven't sold the shares, you will be taxed that gain as if you had sold the shares.
Right.
Now, there are several problems I see with this. The first is, if you bought the shares for $20 and a year later they're $10, are they going to give you a tax rebate on the unrealized losses? It doesn't seem likely. The other issue is that it's all very well to say, let's do that for those people who have millions and millions of super in super, whoever they are. But it has been broached that to make that tax equitable, that everybody will have to report on that, regardless of how little they have in super. This is going to be an administrative nightmare as well as possibly a financial nightmare for people.
And the discussion about it, Carla, is, people come down and once, oh, well, you know, you're about protecting rich people's super. The reality is this limit, Madeline, that they're talking about where it will apply is if you have $3 million or more in your super. That figure is not indexed. So over time, that $3 million, so currently with inflation at 5%, so basically next year, that limit effectively is $2.85 million, mm-hmm. right? And it gets...
And the year after and so on and so on.
And
exactly.
So on. So there you go, Carla. Let's here's the task for you. You need to... get that commission so we can talk to that person on air. There you go.
Well, as it happens, we've been having that conversation actually this morning with one of the researchers who's made a submission to the government inquiry and is going to look at doing a paper looking at the things that are wrong with this proposal, basically.
Great.
And
great.
Yes, and he'd be happy to come on, I'm sure, after he's written that paper.
Fantastic. We're out of time, Carla. I want to thank you for talking to us this morning, but also, you know, for, saying to me, hey, Macca, what about this person? Would you like to speak to them? And, you know, helping us populate the show. And, you know, when people talk about things that are based on evidence, it's a very interesting concept that doesn't often, in some media, evidence doesn't seem to matter. So I really appreciate it. Thank you for your time, but also thanks for your support of Saturday Magazine and Joy, which has been very long-standing. I really appreciate it.
Macca and Madeline, a pleasure, and thank you for having me on.
Cheers. Thank you, Carla.
You are on Saturday Magazine Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.